Welcome back to the Crypto Daily. Today we're diving into the fascinating intersection of meme coins, Bitcoin's correlation with traditional markets, and the evolving DeFi landscape. Joining me is Alex, a seasoned crypto analyst. Alex, Binance Research highlights a surge in meme coin activity in October. What's driving this renewed interest?
Thanks for having me. It's a confluence of factors. While Bitcoin's increasingly mirroring the S&P 500, a sign of its growing acceptance as both a risk asset and a hedge, meme coins are experiencing a resurgence, almost defying this trend. Dogecoin's 33% jump, fueled by another Elon Musk nudge, is a prime example of how these tokens can move independently of broader market sentiment. It's a reminder that speculation and social media narratives still hold significant sway in this space.
It's interesting how these seemingly disparate trends, Bitcoin's integration with traditional finance and the meme coin frenzy, coexist. Binance Research also notes that most blockchain revenue is application-driven, not chain-driven. What's your take on that?
It underscores the importance of utility. While Layer 1 blockchains provide the infrastructure, it's the applications built on top that generate real value. Think of it like the internet. The infrastructure itself is crucial, but it's the websites and platforms that we interact with that drive usage and revenue. This also ties into the rise of Solana as the go-to platform for token launches. While it democratizes access, it also creates a breeding ground for speculative trading, as evidenced by the meme coin dominance on the platform.
So are we seeing a decoupling between underlying blockchain performance and the success of applications built on them? Is this sustainable?
It's a complex dynamic. The success of applications ultimately benefits the underlying blockchain, but speculative bubbles like the one we're seeing with meme coins on Solana can create volatility and potentially harm the ecosystem in the long run. The challenge is finding a balance between fostering innovation and mitigating risks. The fact that DeFi TVL is also seeing growth, particularly on Solana, suggests that there's genuine interest in decentralized applications beyond just meme coin speculation. But, as always in crypto, caution is warranted.
Let's dive into the world of real-world assets, or RWAs, on the blockchain. Institutional interest is surging, with projections of a massive market by 2030. What's driving this, Michael?
It's about bridging the gap between traditional finance and crypto. Big investors see RWAs as a way to address pricing inefficiencies in both markets. Tokenization unlocks liquidity for traditionally illiquid assets like real estate and private debt, opening them up to a wider investor base.
We're seeing major players like BlackRock making significant moves in this space. Is this just a trend, or is there real staying power here?
The potential is enormous. Think about the benefits: fractionalization, reduced transaction costs, automated compliance, and integration with DeFi. This isn't just about replicating existing financial instruments, it's about creating entirely new possibilities.
But what about the challenges? Scalability, regulation, security, these are significant hurdles.
Absolutely. Standardized verification, robust custody solutions, and legal frameworks are crucial for the continued growth of RWAs. The industry needs to address these challenges head-on to build trust and ensure long-term stability.
So, are RWAs the future of finance or just another hype cycle?
I'm betting on the former. While challenges remain, the convergence of traditional finance and blockchain through RWAs is a transformative trend. It's not just about the tokenization of existing assets, it's about creating a more efficient, transparent, and accessible financial ecosystem.
Ethereum fees are expected to rebound due to increased activity on Layer 2 scaling networks. This is interesting because fees had dropped significantly after the Denken upgrade. What's your take, Matthew?
It's a classic supply and demand scenario. L2s are driving demand for data storage on the mainnet, which translates to higher fees. The initial drop was expected, as the blobs feature hadn't been fully utilized. Now, with L2s like Base, Scroll, and WorldChain gaining traction, we're seeing that utilization increase, pushing fees back up.
And what about the price surge? Ether's up nearly 25% since the start of the year.
Several factors are at play. The overall market sentiment is bullish, especially after Bitcoin's recent all-time high. Also, the ETH-BTC ratio seems to have bottomed out, suggesting a potential for further gains in Ether's price. increased institutional interest, like the Michigan Retirement System's investment in ETH ETFs, further strengthens the bullish case.
So are we looking at a sustained rally, or is this just another temporary spike?
While predicting the market is always risky, the underlying fundamentals for Ethereum look strong. The growth of L2s, increasing institutional adoption, and a potential shift in the ETH-BTC ratio all point towards a potentially sustained upward trend. However, external factors, such as regulatory changes or macroeconomic shifts, could always influence the market.
It seems interoperability is the word on everyone's lips these days. We've got Magic Labs and Polygon partnering on a cross-chain smart wallet for AgLayer, Cytonic securing funding for its multi-VM blockchain, and Eclipse launching its Solana VM chain on Ethereum. It's a lot to unpack.
Indeed. It highlights the industry's growing recognition of the liquidity fragmentation problem. These projects are all tackling it from different angles, which is encouraging.
Let's start with Magic Labs and Polygon. Their Newton testnet aims to enable liquidity sharing across multiple chains. How significant is this partnership?
It's a noteworthy development. Polygon's CDK, combined with Magic Labs' wallet abstraction expertise, could create a powerful synergy. The promise of chain-abstracted smart wallets and simplified cross-chain launches is compelling for developers.
Cytonic's approach is quite different. They're building a multi-VM blockchain compatible with both Ethereum and Solana. Is this a viable solution?
It's an ambitious undertaking. A multi-VM blockchain could theoretically streamline cross-chain interactions, but the technical challenges are substantial. Their success hinges on achieving true interoperability and attracting a critical mass of users and developers.
And then we have Eclipse, bridging Solana and Ethereum with an SVM L2. How does this fit into the broader picture?
Eclipse offers a more targeted solution, focusing on combining Solana's speed with Ethereum's security and liquidity. This could be particularly attractive for projects already within the Solana ecosystem looking to access Ethereum's larger user base.
So we have three distinct approaches to interoperability. What are the potential implications for the DeFi landscape?
If successful, these projects could significantly reduce friction in DeFi. Imagine seamless asset transfers, unified liquidity pools, and a more interconnected ecosystem. It could unlock a new wave of innovation and growth.
But there are also potential downsides, right? Competition, security risks, and the potential for further complexity.
Absolutely. It's a complex landscape, and there's no guaranteed winner. The key will be achieving true interoperability without compromising security or decentralization. It's a race to see who can effectively bridge the fragmented blockchain world.
Solve Protocol is making waves in the Bitcoin DeFi space with its revamped Solve BTC Reserve. They're classifying underlying assets to enhance security and yield opportunities, which is a pretty big deal for Bitcoin holders looking to maximize their returns.
It's a smart move, especially with the growing complexity of wrapped Bitcoin assets. By categorizing assets into core and innovative reserves, Solve is creating a more transparent and manageable risk profile for users. This distinction between native BTC, BTCB, and other wrapped assets like WBTC and TBTC offers a clearer picture of the underlying collateral.
And this is happening as Solve BTC expands its multi-chain presence, right? They're now on over 10 networks, including Ethereum, Base, BNB Chain, and Arbitrum, with over $2 billion in reserves. That's a significant reach.
Exactly. This multi-chain approach opens up a whole new world of DeFi strategies for Bitcoin holders. Think staking, lending, and other innovative yield-generating opportunities across different ecosystems. It's about maximizing Bitcoin's utility and liquidity in a decentralized world.
It's also interesting to see Solve introducing its Solve token utility within this framework. It's a step towards decentralized governance, where token holders will eventually decide on these asset classifications and parameters. It aligns with the broader DeFi ethos of community ownership and control.
Absolutely. And the integration with Venus Protocol, the largest lending protocol on BNB chain, adds another layer of utility. Solve BTC joining BTCB in Venus's core pool allows users to collateralize Solve BTC to borrow other assets. It further amplifies the potential for DeFi strategies and participation in the broader Binance ecosystem.
So CZ gets a hero's welcome in Dubai, but he's barred from leading Binance. It's a strange dichotomy. What's your take?
It's pure optics. He's cultivating this image of the resilient leader, the martyr even, while maintaining a carefully calculated distance from operational control. It's a way to inspire confidence without legally being at the helm.
But can he truly be back if he's not running the show? Is this just a symbolic return?
It's symbolic, yes, but symbolism holds immense power in the crypto world. CZ's presence, his influence, remains palpable. He's the face of Binance, the rallying point. His plea deal doesn't erase that.
So what does this mean for Binance's future? Can it truly thrive without its founder at the reins?
That's the million-dollar question. Binance has built a massive empire, but CZ's vision, his risk tolerance, were integral to its success. Can a more conventional leadership replicate that magic? Can they navigate the increasing regulatory scrutiny without his guidance? Time will tell.
So Google Cloud is now a primary validator on the Kronos blockchain, big tech embracing crypto yet again. What's the real significance here?
It's more than just symbolic. Google Cloud's validation adds a layer of legitimacy, of stability to Kronos. It's a vote of confidence from a tech giant, which can attract more developers and users.
But isn't this just another strategic partnership? A way for Google Cloud to expand its reach into the Web3 space?
Certainly, it's strategically advantageous for Google Cloud, but it also strengthens the Kronos ecosystem. Access to Google Cloud's infrastructure, AI, and data analytics tools is a game changer for developers building dApps on Kronos.
Kronos already has validators like Crypto.com and Ubisoft. What difference does Google Cloud make?
Google Cloud brings a different level of credibility and technical prowess. It signals a maturing of the crypto space, a move towards greater institutional adoption. It's not just about gaming or finance anymore. It's about mainstream tech integration.
So is this a sign of things to come? Should we expect more tech giants to become blockchain validators?
Absolutely. Web3 is becoming increasingly difficult for major tech players to ignore. The open source development, the innovation happening in this space, it's too compelling. This is just the beginning of a larger trend.
So the Swiss National Bank chairman, Martin Schlegel, expressed some reservations about cryptocurrencies. Not exactly a surprise, is it?
Not entirely, no. Central bankers tend to be cautious about anything that could disrupt existing financial systems. But Schlegel's comments are interesting in light of Switzerland's generally crypto-friendly stance.
He highlighted the volatility, the energy consumption, and the association with illicit activities, all the usual suspects.
Yes, but he also acknowledged the growth of crypto. And while he didn't endorse it, he didn't dismiss it entirely either. The SMB is even running a pilot project with a central bank digital currency.
It sounds like a cautious approach. Explore the potential while mitigating the risks, almost like they're hedging their bets.
Exactly. They're keeping an eye on the technology while emphasizing the continued importance of physical cash. It's a balancing act, trying to navigate the evolving financial landscape.
It'll be interesting to see how their stance evolves as the crypto space matures, especially with their ongoing CBDC pilot project.
Indeed. Switzerland has often been at the forefront of financial innovation. Their approach to crypto could be a model for other nations.
So Sygnum Bank, a major player in the digital asset space, is joining the Haven One network as a validator. This seems like a pretty significant partnership.
Absolutely. Sygnum's reputation for regulatory compliance and institutional-grade security lends a lot of credibility to Haven One's proof-of-authority system. It's a big step towards bridging the gap between traditional finance and DeFi.
Haven One's H-Passport, their proof-of-identity system, seems to be a key differentiator here. Requiring KYC-KYB for all participants creates a permissioned environment, which might be more palatable for institutional investors.
Exactly. It addresses the security concerns that have plagued DeFi. Remember the billions lost in hacks and rug pulls last year? This approach mitigates that risk significantly.
It's a trade-off, though. Permission systems sacrifice some of the decentralization that's core to the DeFi ethos. Do you think that's a worthwhile compromise?
In the current climate, I'd argue yes. Security and trust are paramount for attracting institutional capital, which is crucial for DeFi's long-term growth. Haven One seems to be striking a balance, maintaining decentralization while enhancing security.
it will be interesting to see how this partnership impacts Haven One's growth and the broader DeFi landscape. It could be a model for other projects looking to attract institutional investment. So we've been discussing institutional adoption and DeFi security. This story, unfortunately, highlights the other side of that coin, the persistent vulnerability of retail investors. A fake Curve Finance app is back on the Apple App Store, marking its third appearance this year.
It's a frustratingly familiar story. These scams erode trust in the entire crypto ecosystem. It's like a game of whack-a-mole. You take one down and two more pop up. The sheer number of fake apps targeting crypto users is staggering.
The report mentions over 6,500 fake finance apps taken down. That's a mind-boggling figure. And the fact that this Curve Finance imposter keeps resurfacing suggests a real gap in Apple's app review process.
Absolutely. It raises serious questions about their security protocols. How can a known scam app repeatedly bypass their checks? It's not just Apple, though. Google Play has similar issues. The onus is on these platforms to implement more robust vetting procedures.
Ultimately, user education is crucial. People need to be incredibly vigilant when downloading any finance-related app, especially in the crypto space. Double-check the developer, read reviews carefully, and if anything seems off, don't proceed. Thanks for joining us today. That's all the time we have for today's Crypto Daily. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and analysis from the world of digital assets.